Good morning. Today's daf in Me'ila is Yotes. We are in your Chesamud base. We're on the very bottom of the Amud. And we are in the fifth parak of the Masechta. The fifth parak of the Masechta really sets the stage for some of the basic halachas regarding Me'ila. As is the case in many of these Masechtas, the details are discussed in the beginning and some of the more general principled ideas are discussed later in the Masechta. Here's a perfect example. We are just but one parak removed from finishing the Masechta. We finished the Masechta with the sixth parak. And so here in the fifth parak, we're discussing some of the bigger ideas, but that's how Masechtas work. And at this point in time, we're just kind of used to this style. What did we learn yesterday in the Mishnah when opening up the new parak, the fifth parak? So we learned this idea of when it comes to Me'ila. So basically, there are two categories of Me'ila. I mentioned yesterday, Me'ila is a lot of accounting. In other words, it's financial impropriety. So with financial impropriety, so we have to work like accountants. We don't have to be that sophisticated in our accounting. It's pretty straightforward accounting, but still we have to keep everything organized in the right line items. When violating the Isra of Me'ila, so we learned yesterday that there are items that depreciate and items that do not depreciate. For items that depreciate, so your violation of Me'ila only comes about when you gain hana from an item and you depreciate from the item. And as we learned yesterday, the hana and the depreciation have to be one and the same. In other words, that which you benefited from is that which you're actually depreciating from. If you we're going to say this clearly today. Let's say you get benefit from something and then create a depreciation, but from another place in the item, right? You wear the clothing, and after you wear the clothing, you just tear the clothing right into two. So that's not an Isra of Me'ila. It's certainly an Isra, but that's not an Isra of Me'ila. It has to be that the hana and the depreciation comes in the same item. However, the Mishnah also taught us yesterday, if it's an item that does not depreciate, like let's say, for example, jewelry. So you rent jewelry in order to wear it. Certainly has a value. But jewelry tends to not depreciate. The Gemara later on today is going to ask the question. You mean to say that jewelry never depreciates? It does depreciate at one point in time. But to give away the Gemara that we're going to see later on this morning, it does take some time to depreciate. But generally speaking, it really doesn't depreciate. And certainly not the kind of depreciation that we're talking about, like regarding food or even the wearing of clothing. So those things have immediate depreciation. But when it comes to jewelry, so it doesn't depreciate. Let's just say it nice and simple. So it doesn't depreciate. So the Isra Me'ila comes about when you benefit from the item. There you don't have to depreciate the item. So the Isra Me'ila is only with Hana, but with no depreciation. So basically, we learned yesterday in the Mishnah that there are two categories when it comes to Me'ila. Items that depreciate, items that do not depreciate. Yesterday, the Mishnah gave numerous examples that exist on both sides. Well, numerous. Three on one side, three on the other side. The Mishnah also gave an example of a carbon chatas before it died, after it died. We're going to be talking about that example in the Mishnah also later on this morning. What we started with yesterday, if you look at the bottom of Yud Ches Siman Aleph, is we started with a braisa. A braisa, as we pointed out yesterday, it's really more than a braisa. It's a sifra. It's a comment from Torah's Kohanim, meaning the psukim that describe Me'ila in the Torah are found in Parshas Vayikra, which means that the medrash halacha that we're going to be looking at in order to expound these psukim are going to be found in the Torah's Kohanim. So the Gemara yesterday quoted the Torah's Kohanim, and we made numerous points from the Torah's Kohanim. The first point that we made, which we're also going to come back to later this morning, is going to be that everyone is capable of violating Me'ila, a commoner, a king, and a Kohen Gadol. Everybody's eligible to violate the Isra of Me'ila. No one's above the Isra of Me'ila. So that's the point that we learned yesterday, which we're gonna come back to, circle around. But the other point that we made yesterday in the Braisa is regarding the nature of Me'ila and its connection to to Truma. Truma, the Torah says uses the word chait. By Me'ila, the Torah also uses the word chait. And so, as a result of the fact that the Torah uses the word chait in both times, and there's obviously a mesorah, so therefore what we have is a gzeres sheva linking the two. The linkage of the two teaches us that many of the halachas that apply by Truma also going to apply by Me'ila as well. In fact, the Gemara cited no less than six different halachas that we learn from Truma, which have carryover and an application over to that of Me'ila. So what I'm going to do right now is we're going to quickly just go over this point of the Gemara. And I know we did this yesterday, but it happens to be fundamental and it's good review of what we saw yesterday. And it really carries us well into today's daf as well. So let's see the Gemara inside. The Nemar chet. I'll start four lines from the top of the amud. An yud ches amud beis. Nemar chet b'truma v'nemar chet b'meila. It says chet when it comes to truma. It says chet when it comes to meila. Machet amur b'truma. So as far as chet when it comes to truma. So what are the various halachas that we learn? Number one, pogim v'nene. So it depreciates and you are getting benefit. Meaning, how do you violate the Isser of Truma? Meaning, when I say the Isser of Truma, what do I mean by that? I mean, you're not a Kohen, and you're eating the Truma. So how do you violate that Isser? The way you violate that Isser is by eating it. So here we have consumption and benefit, which are coming at the same time. So the Pagam and the Hana are coming. And Misha Pagam Nana. On top of that, also, the one who is depreciating is the one who's receiving benefit. And number three, v'davar shepogim bo nana. And it's in the item that's depreciating and that's in that which you're benefiting. And number four, pegimas avanasu ke'echad, is coming simultaneous. And number five, v'tal shmena karka. It has to be something detached from the ground. We made this point clearly yesterday. Truma is only truma after it's detached from the ground. When connected to the ground, you can't call it truma. I mean, you could, but it doesn't have any significance. It only halakhically has the status of truma only after it's been detached from the ground. And finally, number six, of a shliach, sha'aso shlichuso. And by truma, so I can appoint an agent to shliach in order to be mafresh truma, to separate truma from myself. So there are six halachas that we just learned regarding truma. Three of them happen to be the relationship between hana and pagam, benefiting and depreciating. But okay, but still, there are three separate points to be made regarding hana and pagam, and another three points regarding the nature of the Isser of Truma. It has to be coming simultaneously, it has to be detached from the ground, and there's an institution of shlichus. The Gemara says, with all that in mind, so avchid hamor b'me'ila, so now we're going to say all six halachas are going to have carry over to me'ila. And the Gemara now is going to rattle them off. Number one, pogim benene, that the Isser of me'ila is only when you depreciate from the item and you benefit from the item. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, what about the two categories that we learned in the Mishnah? Aren't there two categories? Isn't there an opportunity by Me'ila to benefit from Me'ila and even without depreciation to violate the Isser of Me'ila? The answer is going to be yes. And later we're going to learn how do we get to that second category. But in the meantime, however, Pogim and Nana depreciates and benefits. Misha Pogim Nana, the person who's depreciating is the one who's receiving benefit. Uvedavisha Pogim Bo Nana, and it's in the item that you're depreciating that you're getting benefit from. Ubikimasa Vehanaso Keachad. Also, the depreciation and the benefit have to be coming simultaneously. Uvetelshmana karka, it has to be uprooted from the ground. And uvishlich shasta shlichuso. And there's shlichus as it relates to me'ila. Now, there's shlichus as it relates to me'ila. Now, that's a big idea. It's a really big idea. We're going to be spending a lot of time tomorrow talking about this idea that there's shlichus by me'ila. Because generally speaking, when we talk about aveiras, ain shlich ledvar aveira. There is no agency when it comes to an aveira. Someone appoints me to do an aveira for him. So, and I'm the one who actually carries out the Avera, I'm the one who is liable for having done the Avera. And I can't say, in no way does the defense work, well, he told me to do it. It just simply doesn't work that way. It's not only intuitive, but it's the halacha as well. That the Eishlech Ledvar Avera. However, there are a couple exceptions to that rule, and Me'ila being one of them. So Me'ila being one of the very few exceptions where, even though we say Ein Shlich L'Dvar Avera, by Me'ila there is Shlichus for Dvar Avera. Tomorrow's daf, we're going to be spending a lot of time with this idea, so I'll bring it up now, but we're going to be discussing it in much greater detail tomorrow. Uvishlich Shasa Shlichuso. Ein Li Ela Ochel V'nene B'Dav Hashem B'Pagam. So far, what have we learned together? By taking all the rules that we learn regarding Truma and having them carry over to Me'ila, we have now learned together that the six rules apply to Me'ila, but right now we're limited only to a category of something where I'm getting benefit and I'm depreciating. Minayin achilasov achilas chavero. Hanayasov hanayas chavero. Hanaasov achilas chavero. Achilasov anas chavero. Shemitzarfim zeim zeim. So the Gemara now wants to know, so we still have more halachas when it comes to Me'ila, more than what we just learned from Truma. Number one, that there is a category of benefiting even though you didn't depreciate from the item. That's one halacha, which, where is that coming from? There's another halacha, which is, what if I couple together my eating and my friend's eating? Meaning, I eat a little bit and I feed some to my friend. Or, I eat a little bit and I have my friend benefit from it. Or, I benefit from it and I have my friend eating it. Or, I benefit from it, and I have my friend benefiting from it. So in other words, in all these scenarios where it's a combination of eating and somebody else eating, and when I say somebody else eating, it means I'm feeding that other person. So how do I know that also will result in me'ila as well? So afilu is ma'meruba. And how do I know even if there's an interval between these periods in time? Now, we're going to hear this again and again over the next couple of minutes of the daf, and that is the double language of Timol Ma'al. If you look in the Parsha in Me'ila, and we made this point already numerous times, there's not a lot of Torah Shebichtav when it comes to Me'ila. There are, outside of Yidaber Hashem HaMoshe Le'Emor, two psukim in the Torah dedicated to Me'ila. So for two psukim, we have 21 blot of Gemara. It's pretty good. Okay, a little over 21. Okay, anyway, sorry for the fact checking. But there are only two psukim, and the first pasuk opens up nefesh ki simol ma'al v'chata b'shkaga mikatshe Hashem. So the first pasuk opens up with the double language of timol ma'al, and what we're going to keep hearing again and again over the next couple of minutes is that what this double language does is basically it opens up the halachas of me'ila. Meaning, our starting point is that whatever is true by Truma is also going to be true by Me'ila. But now, because the Torah says Timol Ma'al, so it opens up to now new, if you will, new vistas in the halachas of Me'ila. It's going to be a little bit strange because we're going to keep amplifying and keep including more halachas when it comes to Me'ila because of this Timol Ma'al. As if to say that because the Torah gave us a repetitive language, so now we get to add on so many more halachas. Admittedly, it's a little bit strange because, generally speaking, even if we're going to add a halacha, maybe add one halacha, maybe add two halachas, the idea that we're just adding all these halachas, think about what we just already added. We just added now that there's a new category, meaning by truma, there's only one category of hana and pagam. Now we're adding a new category, which is just hana. For those things that don't depreciate, now there's also going to be a hana. We also just added another halacha of combination. If I eat a little bit and I feed it to somebody else. If I eat a little bit and I have somebody else benefiting from it. So we just added that as well. We're adding a lot of things from Timol Ma'al. It's okay, so and it's an admission on my part that it's a little unusual. We don't normally just open up Pandora's box to all these new halachas, but that's what we're doing here by Me'ila. And the Bryson now is just noting, you know, this is not true by Truma. By Truma, I can't combine two consumptions. I eat a little bit of Truma and I feed it to somebody else. Those two do not combine together. Okay, that's true. And when it comes to Me'ila, they do combine. I eat a little bit now and I feed it to somebody else. Not only that, let's even stick an interval in between the two. I eat a little bit now and I feed somebody to somebody else tomorrow. That also will be subject to Me'ila. Why? Again, Timol Ma'al, because of the double language, Mikom Makom, Im Achid Hamor B'Truma Pigimah Savanasu Keachad, Minayin La'achilas V'achilas Chaver, V'afilu Mikan V'ashol Shana Minayin, Tamalam Timol Ma'al. You know, when it comes to Truma, so the depreciation and the benefit have to be coming simultaneously. You know, by Me'ila, once again, I could eat a little bit now, feed some to my friend, it could be 3 years from now, and still going to be subject to Me'ila. Why? Timol Ma'al Mikom Makom. Because again, of the amplification of Timol Ma'al. So imachir hamor b'truma, ashi yatsa min hakodesh l'chol, More contrasting. You know, when it comes to truma, so what do I do if I'm a non-Kohen eating truma? So what I've done now is I have defiled the truma, meaning I've removed the status of truma from the truma when I'm eating it. Now, exactly when is that true? Meaning the moment it goes into my mouth, when I swallow and ingest it. Gemara is not particularly clear. But the idea is that if I'm a non-Kohen, and I eat Truma, so now, let's say it's simple. When I start chewing on the food, so at this point in time now, I have defiled the Truma. Now again, my requirement and liability is I have to make full restitution for that which I ate to the Kohanim. Also, if I did so b'shogeg, I also have to add on a Chomish as well. Fine. But when it comes to Truma, it's min HaKodesh L'chol. I've taken something with Kedusha, i.e. Truma, and I've made a Chol, I've made a mundane. By Me'ila, is that going to be the only scenario of Me'ila? So here's what we're about to learn together. No, that's not the only scenario of Me'ila. Me'ila can actually incorporate even a larger and a broader category. as we are now on the top of your Testament Aleph. So, min ha-kodesh le-kodesh. Let's say what I do is I divert. I take money that was hektish money. I dedicate it as hektish money. Okay, fine, but now it belongs to hektish. And it's sitting in my house. And now I take that money and I use it to buy carbon. In other words, I have no authorization to do so. It's not my money. So what I'm doing now is I'm diverting the money from hektish to something for me. But when I say for me, I mean a carbon for me. So now under those circumstances, is that a violation of Me'ila? Now it doesn't follow the model of Truma, because Truma is I took something Kodesh and I made a Chol. Here, I've taken something Kodesh and I've just re-diverted to something which is also Kodesh. Is that Me'ila? And we're going to learn together. The answer is, yes, it is.
Isn't the carbon still?
It doesn't sound that way from the Gemara. I do understand your question. The Gemara does not give a clear indication. It sounds like the carbon would be okay. It sounds that way. Right? What you're asking is like a form of mitzvah abba b'avera. Like, right? It doesn't sound like, it's certainly not right what you did. And when we're talking about something not right, so generally speaking, it doesn't work for a carbon. It's a good point. Kagon. Lakachine zavim v'kine zavos v'kine yoldos. Let's say I took the hektish money and I re-diverted it and I bought a pair of birds with it. Either for a zav or a zava or yoledes. Or shakol shiklo v'hevi chataso v'ashamo. Or let's say I took hektish money and with it I bought a carbon chatos or an asham. Min hektish kevin shahotzi ma'al divrei Rabbi Shimon. Now, according to Rabbi Shimon, so you're in violation of Me'ila. In other words, once I've diverted to another carbon, so you're a mol behektesh. Now, again, this is a deviation from Truma. Truma is only a violation when I took it from Kodesh and brought it to Chol. And again, how did I do that? By eating it. When it comes now to Me'ila, so we have broadened the category. Even though I didn't bring it to Chol, I just simply repurposed it for another carbon. But that's also not good. Meaning, when I say not good, meaning it's a violation of Me'ila. Now here it is a slight machlokus between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Huda. The machlokus over here between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Huda is when are you actually going to get tagged with having violated the Isra Me'ila. So according to Rabbi Shimon, it sounds like from the point of redirection. Rabbi Huda Omer Ad Shiyizrok Adam. Rabbi Huda actually goes one step further. And that is that when you took your carbon that you bought with your hektish money, which you shouldn't have done, and now not only did you buy your carbon with it, but you actually went through with the carbon to the point where you did Zrikas Adam, now you're at the point of no return, now you have offered this carbon with money that you redirected from Hektesh, and so at that point in time, now you're in liability of Me'ila. Okay, so Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Huda are arguing in terms of the specifics of when exactly are you in violation of Me'ila, but still, the two of them agree that the repurposing of hektesh money for other hektesh is a violation of Me'ila. And at this point in time, we all know how the brayso is going to end. And how do I know that? How do I know that by Me'ila we have a broader application of Me'ila over that of Truma? And the answer is Timol Ma'al, the double language of Timol Ma'al. So I haven't now, it's not so hard, but I haven't like tallied up the number of halachas that we learned from the word Timol Ma'al, but safe to say it's about a half dozen, and safe to say it seems like a lot more than what Timol Ma'al is able to do. So, right, I guess the simplest way to say it is that from a Torah Shebaal Peh standpoint, from a Masorah standpoint, they knew all these halachas existed, and in terms of how we darshan it from the words Timol Ma'al, so it could just very well be that it's not a direct rasha. It could just simply be that we know that the categories of Me'ila are wider than that of Truma. Anyway, Adkan. That takes us to the end of the Braisa, and now we are ready to do what the Gemara typically does. After having quoted such a long Braisa, the Gemara is going to go over the Braisa point by point, not every single point, but whatever is interesting to the Gemara, whatever is difficult for the Gemara is going to be sitting on each point of the Braisa. So we go back all the way to the beginning of the Braisa. The first part of the Braisa, which we didn't review this morning, but we saw yesterday, is that everyone is eligible to violate the Isra Me'ila. It doesn't matter who you are. You're not above the law of Me'ila. You could be a commoner, a king, or a Kohen Gadol, and you will be subject to Me'ila if you misappropriate. So Amar Mar Nefesh Echad Yachid VeEchad Anasi VeEchad Amashiach BeMashma SheYachol. So the Gemara says my Mashma. So Nefesh Ksiv. So the Gemara says, BeMashma SheYachol Mai. So what the Gemara now is bothered is the following: what's your Havamina? Pshita. Isn't it obvious? Nefesh Ksiv. So the Torah says the word Nefesh. And now the Brice is making such a big deal that no one's above the laws of Me'ilah. Okay, no one's above the laws of Me'ilah. Like, why would I have thought differently? Why would I have thought that just because you're the king, oh, you can misappropriate temple funds? You can misappropriate a carbon? Right, you're the Kohen Gadol. Okay, good. Now you're in a position where you can misappropriate. Right? And putting the cynicism aside, meaning, about politicians in general and people in high authority. But, in other words, putting all the cynicism aside. Obviously, they're not above the law, and why would I need a special halacha to teach me that such people are also eligible to violate me'ilah? So So the Gemara says, oh, because what do we remember? What we discussed the Shemna Mishcha? Shemna Mishcha is the anointing oil, which obviously is hakdesh, and you use it to anoint. Now you anoint who? So as we already discussed, anyone who's going to sit in the position Kohen Gadol is going to go get anointed with the Shemna Mishcha. And the Torah says that if I put it on a Zar, on a non-Kohen, so or a non-Kohen Gadol, so then he's in violation. So, Deha Imshich Begaveh. So our Kohen Gadol was anointed with the Shemna Mishcha. So one can make now the argument of, well, we use the Shemna Mishcha on his behalf for anointing. Now, we're not suggesting that he could just keep going back to it and using it again and again, but in the very least, what we're suggesting is that if he does, he's not going to be in violation of Me'ilah, Kamash Malan. So the Gemara says that's the Chiddush. Chiddush is that the din of Me'ilah would apply to everyone, even a Kohen Gadol, even somebody who has been anointed with it. Now it's interesting, the Gemara didn't describe the relationship of kings to the Shemana Mishcha. This goes back to what we discussed in detail back in Krisus in terms of which kings get anointed with the Shemana Mishcha. Right, Kohen Gadol, remember, every Kohen Gadol is going to be anointed with the Shemana Mishcha. The Kohen Gadol's position is non-inherited position, and so even if you're a Kohen Gadol ben Kohen Gadol, you're still going to get anointed with the Shemana Mishcha. But when it comes to a king, that's not always true. Meaning a king's position can be a inherited position. We'll go back to Krisus for more details on that. Okay, now, another point that we made yesterday. The idea of Me'ilah is an idea of Shinui. Right, you've diverted, you changed, right? And not necessarily a physical change, but in other words, you took something dedicated for one thing, and now you repurposed it for something else. That is Me'ilah. How do I know that? So if you remember yesterday's daf, we had two other areas in the Torah where the word Me'ilah was used to describe such a phenomena of redirecting, repurposing. One was by the Sota, where the Torah uses the word Mal over there, and another is by Avodah Zarah, where the Torah uses the word mal. Actually, by Avodah Zarah, it was a pasuk in Divrei Yamin. But still, the word me'ilah is being used over there. So, me'ilah is used in describing me'ilah, meaning our discussion of misappropriating temple funds, sota, and Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara now wants to know, what do we gain by all these comparisons? And that's what the Gemara now is going to discuss. Akshe rechman l'sota. Ula avodas kochavim. Ula Truma. So you know that Me'ilah is now connected to Sota, Avodah Zarah, and also to Truma. Now, by the way, by Truma, we don't have a pasuk of Me'ilah when it comes to Truma, but we do have the Gzera Shava, which we've been spending most of yesterday discussing. So, in three arenas of Halacha, we are comparing it to that of Me'ilah. What do we gain by all three? So the Gemara goes on to explain. Liso to Dafa Gavdala Pagam, Gabi Hektishnami, Nasna Tabas Biada Mala. So its connection to Sota. Now, by Sota, what happens with the Sota? You have a woman who's dedicated to her husband, right? There should be fidelity between her and her husband. And meanwhile, she goes and she's with another man. Okay, was there Hana? Yes, there was. Was there Pagam? Was there actual physical change in her? And the answer is no. Because already she's a married woman. She's not a Basula. She's a Ba'ula. And now she's with another man. So in other words, there's no pagam, but there's ana. Oh, so that speaks to the category of me'ilah where there's ana, but there's no pagam. Like, for example, like jewelry. Okay, good. Ki akshe rechman lavos kochavim da'adis be'shinui. So gabe hektish nami ad debika bekardon avivgom upagom. The end of the sentence over here seems to be a little bit superfluous, and I bet you the shita is going to take out some of these words. Yes, he does. Okay, great. Anyway, the comparison between Me'ila and Avodah Zarah. So Avodah Zarah, there's a pagam. Now, admittedly, this part's going to be a little bit difficult for me to try to explain because, quite frankly, I don't fully understand it. But I'm going to give it a try. In other words, by Avodah Zarah, so there's a pagam. Now, what's the pagam by Avodah Zarah? So you should have a relationship and fidelity with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You leave a Kadosh Baruch Hu and you go to Avodah Zarah. And there's pagam. Now, there's really pagam in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu is untouchable. Literally, figuratively, halachically. So is there a real pagam? Right? Okay, fine. Yeah, right. You have to say something along those lines. Meaning the answer is yes. The Gemara is asserting that there is a level of pagam, and now that we're going to have that idea, we're going to take it and now use it and bring it over to Me'ila. Notably, the usage of tools. A tool belongs to Hekdesh, and you use that tool, so there, because it's an item of depreciation, so you're only violating Me'ila when you actually create a pagam in that item. Okay. Akshay Rechman Latruma. So far, we have the connection between Me'ila and Sota. We have the connection between Me'ila and Avodah Zarah. And now we're up to number three, the relationship between Me'ila and Truma. Ma'truma ki yochal prat lamazik, gabe hektishna miki kol davar achila ki mazik lepater. And so by Truma, we're going to now learn a new halacha together. By Truma, so the violation of Truma, the classic violation in which you are now considered a benefiter, who is now going to have to pay back principal and chomish, is only when you eat. What if you don't eat? But let's say you damage, right? You are basically going to consume it in a way, in a manner which is damaging. So under those circumstances, by truma, that's mazik truma, that's not ochel truma. And you're not going to be liable under those circumstances for paying keren and chomish. Obviously, you're mazik, which means you're going to have to make restitution, but not keren v'chomish. Same thing is true now regarding me'ila. If, let's say, instead of eating the hektish food, you go ahead and you damage it, so you're not in violation of me'ila. Now, obviously, you're going to have to make restitution for the damage which you did, but it's not a me'ila type of infraction. There won't be chomish, there won't be a carbon asham, etc., etc. Ketza nasna ketala, we are continuing now in the Gemara. Jewelry we kept using in the Mishnah as an example of something that does not depreciate. To which the Gemara says, are you sure about that? Amalei Rav Kahana Rav Zvid v'udahav alav bar ivgumehu. You mean to tell me that gold jewelry never depreciates? V'hadahava dekalte denun. You know the daughter-in-law of Nun? Now, Nun over here, obviously the name of some figure, some personality that lived in the time of the Gemara. Obviously, he was very wealthy, right? You mentioned the name Nun, and everyone knew exactly who you were talking about, right? He must have been some sort of wealthy person living back then, right? Our most famous Nun, of course, is the father of Yoshua. Okay. But anyway, right, probably the Gemara is making reference to some personality that lived at the time of the Gemara. In any event, his daughter-in-law wore gold, and the gold that was worn by his daughter-in-law, it depreciated. So lahecha azal. So the Gemara says, now where did it go? Meaning Gemara is asking rhetorically, like, okay, like in other words, she wears it and it wears down and it wears out. So amar lei dilma dahava diramyan kalatech hu. So the Gemara gives a couple of proposals. First of all, the Gemara says, not really in a flattering manner, is that she really didn't take care of it. The literal translation of the Gemara, de ramyan kalatechu, right? She throws it down. She doesn't take proper care of it, and that's why it depreciates. It's not, in other words, in of itself, it really is not supposed to depreciate, but because she takes care of it in the manner in which she does, that's why it depreciates. Okay, that's one way the Gemara addresses it, but the Gemara then also addresses it from a slightly more fundamental standpoint. Va'od, nihida lo ika nana upigam la'alter la'olami lo ika pigima. Gemara says, look, it's true. It will depreciate over the course of time. But that's, we're talking about a long period of time. And I know we had a similar discussion yesterday's daf regarding things that depreciate at a slower rate. But over here, when it comes to gold jewelry, like there's nothing even to debate. Yes, if over years it's going to go down in value somewhat. That's true. It could go up as well. But the point is that when we're looking at depreciation vis-a-vis Me'ila, we're looking at something that will depreciate with usage, meaning that there is a clear connection, correlation between usage and depreciation. Over here, yeah, okay. A year's use, 5 years use, 10 years use, and there may be depreciation, maybe. But that does not qualify as a depreciation that is going to is siren off the Me'ila infraction. Continuing in the Gemara, we only have just about a little bit more to finish off the Mishnah, Anenim and Achatas. So the Gemara wanted to give, the Mishnah wanted to give another example of Me'ila as it related to a carbon. So what was an example of a Me'ila that related to a carbon? And again, where it falls under category number one, an item that is not subject to depreciation, and item number two, something that is subject to depreciation. So the Mishnah very cleverly gives an example of a carbon. A carbon, while it's alive, falls under category number one, something which is subject to depreciation, and then after it's dead, falls under something that is not subject to depreciation. To which the Gemara says, wait, can we go back over category number one, your first example? A carbon, while it's alive, something which is subject to depreciation. The Gemara now is asking the question, how? How is it subject to depreciation? So, michti, ibe behema tamim mahainu koshal zav. Let's say it's a carbon which is not blemished. It's a gold cup. How is it a gold cup? Actually, it's very simple. I have to bring a carbon if I commit myself to bringing a carbon. Okay, so I bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. Now I bring the carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, and someone comes over and makes usage of that item. And let's even say that it goes down in value. To me, so what? So what? Meaning, as far as I'm concerned, in order to satisfy my obligation, what do I have to do? I have to bring a carbon. Whether the carbon was worth $100 or now worth $80, to me, it's all the same. So from my standpoint, there is no idea, there's no concept of depreciation as it relates to a functional and usable carbon. As long as I'm able to use the carbon, I'm good. So there, what bothers the Gemara right now is that this is not really an item of depreciation, because what difference does it make? So to which the Gemara says, that's an excellent point. Amra papa bibalas mumavskinen. Oh, so we're not talking about a functional carbon. You know what we're talking about? A carbon that got blemished. Oh, so a carbon that got blemished, so now what do I do with that carbon? Now I redeem it. Oh, so now we're talking about the redemption of an animal. Oh, so now value obviously is very important to me. Meaning if it was originally valued at 100, and now because somebody used it, now it's worth 80, that's $20 I just lost in terms of its redemptive value. Okay, now we understand. Meaning that's something where depreciation matters. Good. Okay, point of clarification. Now it's been clarified. We move on. We're on the Mishnah on Yud Tesamud Beis. The Mishnah on Yud Tesamud Beis is going to basically tell us what we already know. Now, how did that happen? It's very simple. Because we just went through the Braisa over the course of yesterday and today. So we already know these halachas, but we haven't seen it together in the Mishnah. So here's the Mishnah teaching us what we already know. What do we know? So, nene ke bechatzi pruta, paga mechatzi pruta. Let's say I get benefit from a half a pruta, and I depreciate on another half of a pruta, but that depreciation had nothing to do with my benefit. So I can't collectively aggregate the two now in order to get to the Isser of Me'ila. Because as we already established, Me'ila, the benefit and the depreciation have to be one in the same. Oh. Shenena b'shava pruta b'davar echad, upaga b'shava pruta b'davar acher. Let's say it's an item of depreciation. I benefited and I depreciated but on two separate fronts. I benefited from one aspect of it, and I depreciated another aspect of it, and again, a disconnection between the benefit and the depreciation. Lomal ache yene b'shavapruta v'yifkem b'shavapruta b'davar echad. For items of depreciation, you only violate Me'ila when the benefit and the depreciation are coming from one in the same item. If we're talking, let's say, about eating, for example, so then obviously that's always going to be the case. In other words, I am now diminishing its value by eating it and enjoying it, all at the same time. So when we're talking about eating, so obviously it's always going to be one and the same. But if we're talking about things other than eating, right, like an animal, riding the animal, so let's say you ride the animal, getting that benefit from the animal, and now an animal is an item of depreciation, like we already established, so I'm riding the animal, let's say I don't diminish any of the value while riding, and after I ride the animal, so then I give the animal a smack on the leg, and I cause the damage. So I benefited and I depreciated. No, that doesn't work that way. Meaning because in order to violate Mi'ilah, it has to be the benefit and the depreciation are coming from the same act. Now, what about repeat Mi'ilah with an item? So the Mishnah says, under limited circumstances, yes. One person can go and be Mo'el, another person can go and be Mo'el, and you can keep repeating the offense of Mi'ilah on the same item. But really with limited application, and the Mishnah says, behemah, when the Mishnah says behemah, means carbon and a kli sharis. But that's it. And ketzad, I'll give you an example. Rachav aga behemah, vachaber, v'rachav, v'vachaber, v'rachav, kula malu. Let's say each one is riding on an animal. I say animal over here, we mean a carbon animal. So each person is taking a turn riding on the animal. While riding on the animal, diminishing from its value, each person now is going to be subject to Mi'ilah. If let's say it was a golden cup. Now golden cup, we mean over here, Kli Sharis golden cup. And each person now is drinking, benefiting from the golden cup. So each person now is going to be in violation of Mi'ilah. Talash menachatas uvachaver v'talash uvachaver v'talash. Kula malu. Let's say a carbon chatas and each one now is plucking wool off the, not wool, I mean, well, it could be. Right, it could be sheep. Each one of them is plucking wool off of it. And so now, clearly getting benefit from it, each person is going to be in violation of Mi'ilah. Now, what's the big deal over here? Meaning this idea of repeat offense when it comes to Mi'ilah. It's not the normal rule. Why? Because normally, if it's not carbon, and it's not a kli sharis, what happens at the point of Mi'ilah? The item leaves hekdesh. Meaning, if let's say a person was makdish this pencil to the base of Mikdash. Okay, so now it has kedushas damim. Its value is kadosh. I now go ahead and I make usage of the item. So now I am moel and the item leaves hekdesh. That's the general rule. With Mi'ilah, so now I've taken out of hekdesh. So somebody else now comes along and takes and uses said pencil. He's fine. Because by me being Mo'el Behekdesh, I've now taken it out of the property of Hekdesh. I obviously have to make full restitution and Chomish and a Karban Hashem, et cetera, but I remove it from Hekdesh. So these items of Karban and Kli Sharis, because they're non-redeemable items, so therefore the person who uses it and violates Me'ilah, however, does not take the item and remove it from Hekdesh. Consequently, a second person can come and violate Me'ilah. A third person can come and violate Mi'ilah, etc., etc. Rabbi Omer called Davar Shein Lo Pidyon Yesh Bo Mo'el Acher Mo'el. Rabbi says that anything which is not redeemable, so you have this idea of Mi'ilah Acher Mi'ilah. It sounds like Rabbi just repeated what we learned together. Is there any subtle differences between Rabbi and the Tanakhama? I'll give away the Gemara. Yes. There is going to be a subtle difference between Rabbi and the Tanakhama. Rabbi's not just reviewing information for us.
You can't say that by Chula, right? If somebody violates tshuva, eats tshuva, it's finished. Everything's
right. Right. Well,
the second person that comes now.
Well, there's no more tshuva in which to talk about. No, okay. Mani masisim Rabbi Nechemia hidatanya in mol acher mol ela behemah mavad. Our mission is going like the opinion of Rabbi Nechemia. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. This idea of repeated meila by the same object is only by carbon. Rabbi Nechemia om behemah v'kli sharis, and Rabbi Nechemia says behemah and kli sharis. So our Mishnah, which by the way is a Stam Mishnah, is espousing the viewpoint of Reb Nechemia. My time at the Tanakhama Kasav Minyana de Behemoksiv, Dichsib El Hasham. When you go back to the Psukim in the Torah regarding Mi'ilah, again, only two which to talk about. So when you go back to those Psukim, so the Torah is saying it in the context of Karbanos El Hasham. Now it's a little misleading because it's true the Psukim talk about animals, but that's the carbon you bring when you violate Mi'ilah. So it's a little bit out of context in that Now we're saying that the Isser of Mawal Achar Mawal is only when it comes to an animal, because the Torah there, in the Torah uses an example of an animal. Okay, the example of the animal over there is the carbon you're bringing after you violate Mila. But anyway, Rav Nechemya Amar Amlacha Kavachomer Imacher Mevi L'Kedusha Asam Hu Asma L'Kol Shekein. And Rav Nechemya says, okay, look, you're right. The Torah over there, when talking about repeated Mi'ila, is talking about an animal. But can we just compare that with a Kli Sharis, and let's use a little bit of logic. Kal v'chomer. Meaning, when it comes to a Kli Sharis, you know what a Kli Sharis is able to do? It's able to imbue something with Kedushas Aguf. So in other words, it's really it's a causative, it's a catalyst. If you put something in a Kli Sharis, it is now imbued with the Kedushas Mizbeach. So if that is what a Kli Sharis can do, if we have Mi'ila Achar Mi'ila by the actual carbon itself, that which gave it carbon status, you don't think that also will be subject and eligible to Mi'ila Achar Mi'ila? That's the argument of Rabbi Nechemya, which the Mishnah, our Mishnah obviously is accepting and adopting. Rabbi Omer called Davar She'elo Pidyon Yeshbo. Now Rabbi says that anything which is non-redeemable is subject to Mi'ila Achar Mi'ila, which really is just a summary of the first point of the Mishnah, Hainu Tana Kama. That's the Gemara's comment. Isn't Rebbe just repeating what the Tana Kama taught us? So Amar Rava Ika Beinayo. So Rava says, well, there actually is a subtle difference between Rebbe and the Tana Kama, and that is Eitzim. Let's say you dedicate wood to the Beis HaMikdash. Now the Beis HaMikdash needs wood, because daily there's going to be burning on the Beis HaMikdash, on the Mizbeach. That requires fuel. Fuel back then was wood. And so what you're going to do is you're going to dedicate wood to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, is that Kedushas Damim or is that Kedushas Mizbeach? Oh, so funny you ask. Machlokas. Machlokas, whether it's Kedushas Damim or Kedushas Mizbeach. Detan Rabbanan, Hamar Arei Alei Eitzim, Lo Yifcho Mishnei Gezirim. A person commits himself to bringing wood to the Beis HaMikdash, right, on his pledge card. So he folds down the tab that says, I'm good for wood. Right, I'm on the hook for wood. So the minimum requirement of wood that he needs to bring is 2 logs of wood. We're going to talk about later in Masechet Tamid, or in Midos, I forgot which one, but one of those two. We're going to talk about exactly how the wood is shaped and what the wood looks like and the kinds of wood. In other words, we're going to be a little more specific regarding the actual wood. But he's on the hook for 2 logs of wood, according to the Tana Kama. But basically it's a monetary obligation. Rebbe Omer ate some carbon hain. So Rebbe says, you know, that wood, it's going to go up to the Mizbeach, it's going to be fuel for the carbonos, but, says Rebbe, but the wood itself actually also is treated as a carbon. Meaning when you bring the wood to the Beis HaMikdash, that wood that you're bringing actually is going to have the full status of a carbon. Now, it goes without saying that it's not redeemable when you bring that wood up, because it has Kedushas Mizbech, not just Kedushas Damim. But look what else he's going to take, he's going to run away with this idea. So, Eitzim Carbon Hain, Tuna Melach, needs salt. We know any carbon that goes up onto the Mizbech requires salting. According to Rebbe, so does the wood. When you are committing yourself to bring wood, so you're going to salt that wood before you put it up there. Utunim tenufa. Also, it's going to require waving. Just like a carbon requires a waving, according to Rebbe, wood also is a carbon. Therefore, it is going to require waving. Amarevel adivri Rebbe, etzim tunim etzim. According to Rebbe, so now that the wood is going to be burned on the Mizbeach, you know, I need fuel to burn the wood. Now, I know that sounds strange. I need fuel to burn the wood. Isn't the wood itself fuel? Yes, but according to Rebbe, because he treats it like a carbon, so therefore I need additional wood in order to fuel and burn the wood that I was makdish. The Amar Papa Ledivir Rebbe Etzim Srichim Kamitza. Okay, now here's where, if it hasn't gotten strange yet, here's where definitely where it's going to get strange. In other words, bringing Rebbe to his logical conclusion, right? But I say logical. It's going to be a little bit. It's going to be a little bit painful, right? Right. Whenever I don't mean to overgeneralize, but whenever you get too fundamental on any kind of position, so you get to these extreme situations where, like for example, right now. So if wood right now is to be treated like a carbon, so think about it. What kind of carbon does it file under? An animal carbon? Well, it's not an animate object. It's an inanimate object. So it'd be more like a mincha, right? Yeah, okay, fine. Let's say yes. Okay, just, you know, pretend like I'm right. So it's more like a mincha. Okay, so if it's more like a mincha, so what do I do with a mincha? So what the Kohen does with a mincha is he takes his hand and he puts it into the into the flour, he takes a fistful of the flour in order to burn on the top of the mizbeach. So if our wood is going to be like a mincha, so then therefore it's going to require kmitza. Now if it's a log of wood, so how do you do kmitza? So I have in my head, right, it's a funny visualization, I'll share it with you. So it's almost like, you know, like a like someone who is a master of the martial arts. So and he takes his hand and he goes right and he chops right into the block of wood in order to get the kmitza. Maybe a simpler way to do it is to reduce it down to sawdust. And that's why, and that's another way in which you could do kmitza. Okay, I don't want to belabor how exactly kmitza is going to be done, but basically it's taking the idea of Rebbe that the wood itself is a carbon and now bringing it all the way to its logical conclusion. Rapapa Amar, I'm sorry, period. Okay, so what does that give us now? It gives us now a subtle difference between the Tanakhama and Rebbe. They both basically agree in the Mishnah. Anything not redeemable, like a carbon, like kli sharis, anything not redeemable, so there could be repeated offenses of me'ila with that item when it gets used and reused by various people. Okay, because it's not redeemed. And in that regard, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah and Rebbe are saying the same thing. What's the subtle difference between the two of them? When a person is makdish wood. According to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, that's basically, it's a redeemable item, meaning it's not a carbon. And meanwhile, according to Rebbe, it is a carbon. And to what degree is it a carbon? So the Gemara just got done discussing. Just finish up now to the Mishnah. Rav Papa Amar Kashim Mizbech Tamimim V'nasu Balimumim V'Avar V'Shachtam Ika Meinayu. Another subtle difference between the Tanakhama and Rebbe. Let's say you had a carbon, and it then becomes blemished. Now, once it becomes blemished, so now it's no longer eligible to be brought as a carbon, obviously, because now it has a mum. And then what you did is you went ahead and you shechted it, despite the fact that you shouldn't have shechted it. If you redeem it and shecht it, that's great. That's psula hamukdashim. But you didn't redeem it. In other words, you shechted it before redemption. So now, ika meinayu. That's going to be the difference between Rebbe and the Chachamim. What's the difference? Whether now I can redeem it. Can I redeem the blemished carbon after I shechted it? Yes or no? It's a machlokas. And this machlokas now is going to be predicated on or correlated to the debate in our Mishnah in terms of whether or not there could be repeat offense by Me'ila. V'atanya, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Kachim izbech tamim, v'nasu balimam, v'avra shachtam. Rebbe Omer, yikbaru. Rebbe's of the opinion, it's a non-redeemable item. Because since it was a carbon, and even though it got blemished, and you shechted it, and now it's dead, you can't redeem it. Why? So presumably it has to do with the fact that there's a requirement of hamada varacha, it doesn't stand on its own, etc., etc. And v'chachamim omrim yipadu, and the chachamim are of the opinion that you can redeem it. So now that it's redeemable, if a person goes ahead and makes usage of it, so now he's not only mal behektish, but he's taking it out of the possession of hektish, and now brought it to Chulin, and therefore nobody else can be mole in it because he already was. Okay, and that would be then the difference between the two. That kind of takes us to the end of the daf. Tomorrow we start with the new Mishnah.